一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
It's July 5th, and that's an important day because the first Walküre album comes out tomorrow, July 6th. But that's not what everyone here is for, or everyone is here for, I should say. We know you're all here for another episode of the Gur Talk. Yes, the Speaker Podcast crew, or a couple of us, or even one of us, I don't know, are back to discuss episode 14 of Macross Delta. This is your host, Gwyn Campbell, and let me see, calling in from the US, I have.
Hey there, this is Mike Aguirre, a.k.a. Mike in Redlands, and
What are you doing, we've lost most of the rest of the crew to the US as well, Mike. You care to give us the very brief version of what you're all doing over there?
Well, as you know, Adrian and I worked the PA Works booth, and I was there like halftime in the evenings, but Adrian was there like all day from like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. So he's like out. This is the first day he's had to like actually sleep. Egan is, as you know, our mysterious Venus, and he was running around all over the place.
Naked, Renato, as usual, right?
What's that?
He was naked with that long hair, right?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Long flowing hair. He basically looks like a shorter Sashomaru from Inuyasha. It's pretty much that's Egan. Renato's panel was fantastic. Renato is actually probably either in transit or he's getting ready to fly back to Japan, mm-hmm. which is why he can't join us. Panel was informative. And can you believe, Gwyn, that people actually lined up around a corner just to see Renato's panel?
I know. I find that suspicious, Mike. I'd want to talk to the corner in question and make sure it was legit.
I think they thought they were in line for something else, and they were like, "Oh well, I'm here now. I might as well just watch this panel."
I was going to say maybe the people around the corner were like they couldn't see what they were lining up for.
Exactly.
And of course, that gives away our other guest tonight, or pretty much a regular by this point. Over in Australia.
I was going to say, how many times do I have to be on to be a regular?
Well, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners then, Craig?
Hi, it's Craig from Repacked and Reanimated. I probably should have stayed quiet throughout that whole joke, but it went on a little long, so I felt the need to cut in.
Thank you.
But we're here to talk about episode 14 of Delta, or as I like to call it, you will believe that when an Island-class ship and a Macross-class ship love each other very, very much, it's electric.
Yeah. So I should say right off the bat that I haven't seen this one yet. So I'm going to be asking possibly clarifying questions and making inappropriate jokes. But because the subs haven't come out, because the sub guys were all at Anime Expo, I'm yet to see it. I'm currently, as we speak, acquiring the Raw. But the way it's going, I don't think it'll be done in time for me to have so turn it on for this recording. So I'm going to be relying on Gwyn's, I'm sure, exceptional and clear description of what's going on. And by that, I mean, Mike, please, God, help us.
There's no pressure or anything. Before we get started, I just want to say that, yeah, as I mentioned, the first Walküre album comes out tomorrow. But Animate, most branches of Animate over here put it out this evening or today. So I caught that on Twitter. I dropped by Shibuya after work because I'm sure Akihabara would have been possibly sold out. So I picked up the Walküre album, and while I was there, I grabbed the OST that came out a couple of weeks back. We now have like two racks of Delta merchandise in Animate, which is great. I saw several people pick up the Walküre album just while I was there. So
yes,
definitely cool.
Great, and another side note to that, lots of Delta cosplayers, I mean, more than you would think at Anime Expo.
At AX, yeah, I saw a heap of them.
Yeah, and it was, for a show that can't legally air here in the U.S., it has plenty of fans, and Kawamori was very pleased at that, and there'll be another podcast with some of our other crew members about the Kalamori panel. I was there. It was amazing. So it was really, really cool. But yeah, so Delta is doing fantastic over here in the States.
It brings back memories of when Frontier was out and they did the Maine and Megumi and Yoko Kanno concert over at AX, Mike, and it filled up.
Yeah, I was there. The thing was sold out. It was really, it was amazing.
Again, for a show that couldn't be legally viewed.
Exactly.
I don't watch, like, I'm not a, you know, take photos of myself with cute cosplayers or anything like that, but I can count on one hand the number of times I've taken a photo with a cosplayer, and one of them was, like, 2 years ago at Supernova in Sydney, which is a sort of Australian everything con. There was a girl dressed as Cheryl, and I was like, hey, do you mind it? Like, I take a pic, like, I'm a huge Macross fan, I can't believe this Macross. Ended up chatting to her for like half an hour. She was real cool, and she was really into Frontier, and she'd started watching like Seven and was watching some older stuff. So yeah, it was really cool to go from like one person in a crowd of, you know, 100,000 people in Sydney, suddenly at this one in the States, there was like, I saw like 20 different people in different outfits. Like, it was pretty rad.
Yeah,
I have to, well, since everyone's talking about cosplays, I'll say briefly, I was fortunate enough to see both a Hibiki cosplayer and an Ishtar cosplayer last Saturday.
Oh, Sunday. Where's Adrian when you need him?
I know, right? I had to protect what was Adrian, so I made sure to take a picture with the Ishtar cosplayer.
I was going to say, they probably realized it was safe because Adrian was out of the country. Oh. They were like, eh.
What did you see these people at, Gwen?
There was a Macross 2 fan gathering.
Ah, okay.
And we had the... And
both of them were there.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, thank you. No, we had the voice actor for Hibiki there, who I'm now on a first-name basis with.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, I'll be covering it all in a different podcast. But good times, definitely good times. But let's get back to Delta. So we open up episode 14. And look, guys, I know, Craig, you haven't seen it, and Mike, I know you've only seen it raw, but I don't think it's too much to say that ending last week, the ending of the cliffhanger with everyone leaving Ragnar, pretty much, you know, left people hanging. That was one of the bigger cliffhangers for the biggest cliffhanger for the series to date. I don't think it would be overstating it to say that.
Oh, Mrs. Death.
Yeah, I know, there was enough of a shock there that everyone...
Yeah, you're right, maybe that's more a shock than a cliffhanger. Yeah, you're right.
But that's this tough. Opens up in the most Macross 2 way possible. It opens with...
Badly?
Mikko, an awesome opening tune. It opens up with Mikamore dreaming, and it's not 100% clear who she's dreaming of. I'm pretty sure it's her. I think it's her. And she's very obviously in her updated Macross 2 emulator outfit. Wouldn't you agree, yes. Mike?
Is it... Now, is it a... That's what I was trying to figure out. Is it a dream of, like, the past that she's forgotten? Or is it a dream of a future that's yet to come?
We really don't know. It was all really, really brief... Very abstract, you know, but it wasn't the only Macross 2 kind of thing in this episode either. But
and where the heck was she sleeping?
She was just floating midair in zero G, I thought. I thought she was just floating against a window, kind of curled up, so it looked like something weird.
Like she was in space?
She was in protoculture space because she's not human.
She looked like, well, she did look like Sybil floating in space.
Oh, interesting.
Kind of curled up, but
it's almost like she's not human. You're saying, well, if only someone had predicted that a while ago.
Well, no one said. I've never said she was 100% human, Craig. But I just don't think your exact theory is going to hold up. But you know, we'll see.
That's all right. It's all right. You've been wrong before.
Yeah, far too many times to count. So then we get the new, and I'm using quotation marks when I say new opening. It's the Freya version of the old opening. From episode 13.
Right.
It's not 100% the same song. It's because... Well, actually, it isn't, isn't it? Because the rest of Valkyria join in with her halfway through in episode 3. So it is that version. Yeah.
Is it the same animation?
No. Well, it is. Oh, like, okay. So it's her running off. That's the way it starts off, is her singing just how it was and then running and jumping off the ship as she did last week. And Adrian and I were actually discussing this.
Hi, Adrian.
Yes. We're discussing this. We're like, I hope that this is just this week's opening, because essentially the whole opening is just a recap of episode 13. They're all clips from episode 13. Well, so
they did that in, well, not that exactly, but in Frontier. Remember, there's the weird one-off opening of Ranko.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, Craig. Good spot.
Good call. Good call, Craig. And that's so that, again, that's why Adrian and I were kind of saying, well, I hope that they're doing the same thing, that this is just for this week, and then next week we'll get a new OP.
Yeah, that's my presumption. That's definitely what I think will happen. I mean, it was a cute opening to hear.
It was cool,
doing it.
But I mean, yeah, that would make sense. Like, if they I don't know why they do it, but they did it in Frontier, so. Although I still feel like the transit, I meant to look this up before we came back to record, but I still feel like the transit between like the openings was later in Frontier. Because I feel like I feel it was more like in the late teens, but maybe I'm going crazy.
I don't think you're wrong, but I'd have to look it up. But so we have the opening, and then we find out this island class ship from Ragnar that they used to evacuate as many people as possible. And we never find out the name of the ship, as far as I can see. I checked all the on-screen text. So
the island?
Yeah, the island-class ship. they just refer to it as the island-class ship over and over. But it's not in the best of shape. It hasn't been used. It hasn't been flown in 30 years.
Right.
It needs repairs. It desperately needs repairs to a lot of major systems. It's running low on power. And, of course, being an emergency refugee situation, they are low on food and supplies.
That makes sense.
And, Mike, I got to say, how good did that opening shot of the island-class ship with the Elysian in front of it look? Like, Tengen had been busy on that one, I'd say.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing. The artwork, for this being the aftermath episode of a huge episode that probably took tons of work, this was really well done, like... You know, usually you would see, like, in most series, you might see just, like, a slight drop in quality, especially after an epic episode, but that ended, like, the first core. But since this one is starting the second core, like, that island looked amazing. I'm looking at it right now. The detail is just insane.
Yeah. I just got the episode, so I'm just going to start it running now.
Cool. Great. It skipped about 228, and you can see exactly what we're talking about.
Okay.
But yeah, Mike, I mean, that shot was new and nostalgic all at once. It's like, hey, this is how Macross 7 was in my head.
Right.
Do all of the island ships have domes? Like the big shield dome things?
You mean the clamshell?
Yeah, the clamshell, because this one doesn't. I wonder if it was like, once they landed, they used it for parts to make bits and pieces and stuff, because I wonder if that would affect
in 7 and Frontier they do. So yeah, I presumed it was either damaged or they just took it off because having gravity weighing on it. And well, I mean, we learnt that these island class ships could take off again. I'm not necessarily sure they're supposed to, especially given the amount of damage and that this thing seems to have suffered. So Chuck is worried, you know, he's trying to find out what happened to his brothers and sisters. He's a little distracted while they're trying to, you know, get the fleet underway. We see a schematic of the island, of the island-class ship. And I've got to say, on that menu there, it has, like, the subfolders of menus. And the one they're looking at is called Hibiki Sis.
I saw that.
I was like, wait, is that another Macross 2 reference in this? Or is the ship called the Hibiki? How awesome would that be?
Hibiki Sis. That kind of makes sense, actually, Hibiki Sis being the name of the ship.
Right. They don't refer to it by name, but anyways.
So does that mean, is this like a private colony ship then? Like, it's not a... Like, because Chaos is here instead of Nuns, right? Although there were Nuns fighters around in the last episode.
It's been like 30 years, so like, but Ragna, it's not like they settled Ragna. Ragna has indigenous people, so it's like, did humans come to like help Ragna? It's like weird, like, why was the island ship there? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, they showed it landing partly, you know, back earlier in the series. You got to see the Ragnans in the water looking up as it was coming into the atmosphere.
So that could have been Nuns bringing Ragna into the fold as far as becoming a new United Government planet, right?
Right. There's a whole lot, Mike, about how this whole quadrant was, for lack of a better term, I guess, colonized.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it seems suspicious, and it could well be that, you know, the Windermerians, their grudge against humanity could be well-founded, because, as you know, they have gone ahead and violated the Prime Directive in every planet in this sector, right? Really?
Right.
But that's not the Prime Directive of... The Macross Prime Directive is, hey, everyone, we're here, join with us.
Yes.
True, but they're looking for habitable planets, not necessarily cohabitable, I guess. I don't know.
I think that's interesting, actually, because it's an interesting idea about the UN spacing in general that we don't really, at this moment, have a clear idea about. You know, and that is, what is the policy for how these things work? Do the Nuns people, do they just land and then say, hey, we're here now? Or, like, is there negotiation? Because the impression is that with Windermere, they just kind of landed.
Well, there were negotiations, they said. They said that the humans approached them with a, you know, outstretched hand of
peace. Oh, that's true. Peace, that's true.
But they were negotiated. You know, they negotiated a deal that was like a deal with the devil kind of thing.
That'd be an interesting story to see down the track. Not necessarily for Windermere or Ragna or anything, but like if they wanted to do like another Macross tale, like the tale of like what happens when a colony ship lands on a planet. I think there's a story to be had in that. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm going away from the episode, and I shouldn't be. I got distracted by the horrible character animation. I got to disagree with you, Mike. Like, you said that the animation looks good after a big episode. The ships look good, but the character animation of all of the leads when they're on the bridge talking to Arad, the captain, oh, boy.
Ah. I saw Machina and Reyna, and I was distracted.
Well, they're short on power, and of course, the best way is to get power from the Elysian's reactors. The Elysian should have enough to cover it, both itself and the island. However, the island's docking systems are shot to heck. They can't be used without a fair amount of repairs. And so, this lack of power means things like, you know, the sky projection on the dome is constantly flickering. You know, refugees are worried. Chuck wants to, rather emotionally tells Arad he wants to go back to Ragnar and find out whether his sister's alive and whether everyone else is okay. And Arad's like, you know, no, it's out of the question. We have the resources. We can't split the fleet. And when he said that, I was getting flashbacks to Battlestar Galactica. But They have spy cameras still on Ragnar, and so they show where the Sigur Valens is, and the fact that the Windermerian forces are feeding the locals apples and water. Nefarious plans. Very nefarious.
But so, didn't they publicize that what they're doing? I guess it's better than starving. So.
Exactly, right? I mean, they're priming anyone who our heroes are going to go back and potentially save to be extra susceptible to the Var.
But the Ragnans are aquatic. Couldn't they, like, get... You know what? It doesn't matter. Let's keep going.
And I was just, well, we don't know that everyone's accepting the apple and water handouts, but people are.
Sure.
So, you know, imagine what happens if Chuck goes back and his sister's all Varred out.
You know. Yeah.
That's what I think it could be possibly setting up for, but anyways, nefarious shenanigans. What Chaos needs here, the problem is, Arad and Johnson and crew, you know, they're a private military organization. They move when they have money, they'd been in the middle of signing their contract, you know, a few episodes back when everything went to crap, and they can't really ask for money because they didn't really finish the contracts yet. So they're short of money, short of power, energy for the ship, short of food. It's a really worst-case scenario. We get a quick flashback to nuns who are looking at the scenario on Ragnar with Windermere. And, you know, they seem to be making preparations for something, and there are references made to, like, we should have, you know, ended things properly 7 years ago. Nuns are, again, being portrayed as very shadowy in a bad way.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, New UN... Yeah, New UN Space Nuns, yeah.
Nuns, yeah, you're right.
In a really nefarious way. There hasn't been a good representation of New UN Space in a long time, but they're either incompetent or they're scheming.
Yeah, I mean, Frontier was never... They were never really... I mean, they were outmatched, but they weren't really incompetent. Like, there was a scheming person, but he was kind of... He wasn't really... I mean, I guess technically he was in the government, but he wasn't really nuns. Like, the Prime Minister of the Frontier, or the President? He was the President, wasn't he? President class.
Right.
He was all right. Like,
he was just the President. What's he got to do with nuns?
Well, right, but I mean the ship it's like Max and Millie, like it's all connected, like as in Max and Millie are in Seven, like the she was the mayor who'd been elected in, and he was the captain of the ship, and while there was conflict, they were still kind of the co-leaders of the thing, and like President Glass was at multiple points was in the Situation Room on the Frontier when they were being attacked and handling things, and like you see that a few times,
right?
So I mean, I don't think it's fair to say that every time Nuns has been portrayed since, I guess, well, I mean, in Seven, I guess that was still UN Spacey, but I mean in Frontier, I don't think that's necessarily fair to say that they were the bad guys.
No, I didn't say bad. They just seem to be, you know, scheming or just not on the level.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I agree with you that in Delta. I don't know if I agree in other shows.
When we kind of glossed over, you had mentioned Chuck and his sister, but Chuck was reunited with his younger siblings.
Yeah,
and then they actually say, "Hey, you know," he's like, "Oh, where's I think is her name Marina or." Not sure exactly what the older sister's name is, the one that had a crush on Messer. Yeah. I think it's Marina. Gwen,
I'd have to go and double check.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like Marina, but I'm not sure.
I'm there with Craig when it comes to names.
So he's like, where's your sister? Where's she at? And then they start crying and saying, you know, oh, Chuck, she saved us, but... Like, so then they show the flashback of her closing them inside the Nyan Nyan restaurant and then the wave sweeping her away. And so they think she's dead.
And well, they just don't know she's all right. But
yeah. Right. And then Chuck just says, oh, she'll be okay. She'll be okay. But you could tell he's worried. So, like, they're leaving it ambiguous as far as what happened to her.
Right.
I think that's going to be the surprise when they get back to Ragna. Like, she'll show up and be like, hey, guys, what's up? I'm fine, or whatever.
I kind of hope that's not because I didn't like her as a character or anything, but I feel like that would be a bit cheap.
I feel like they would do that just because they killed Messer so early. So it's kind of like, oh, here, you know, we'll placate you. We'll make Chuck happy. You know what I mean? That's kind of my feeling.
Yeah, I don't think she's a character on the level of Messer, though.
If they kill her, she can be with Messer. Everyone wins. Come on.
Yeah, she's a jellyfish. She's fine. Exactly.
They can float around together. I predict she'll be all varred out, but we'll find out. So we find out that the Sigurvalens, the Windermereans, are going to return to Windermere, which they do at the very end of the episode in the Stinger. Because Hines needs to be coronated and the king needs to be given a funeral. Keith, we find out, is unfortunately alive, but hospitalized. It looks like Hayate got him pretty good. He's in a coma or something by the looks of it. So Hayate got him pretty good. So it'll be interesting to see if he has any change in like how he thinks of Hayate, or like or any change to his personality when he comes out of this, having lost, you know, the White Knight, having his ass handed to him by someone who wasn't even Messer.
Well, you know, if you remember in the couple episodes back when Hayate was going after him, like he was just very dismissive because he just wanted to fight the, you know, the Shinigami, the Grim Reaper, right? And so now that Hayate came, I mean, if we remember the last episode, he was like, oh yeah, you're flying that ship, whatever. And then he was surprised that Hayate actually had the ability to fly with him. So I'm thinking that hopefully when he wakes up, he will see now that Hayate is basically like his new rival, and in his mind, at least a worthy successor to the Grim Reaper.
Possibly. Do you think he's going to change that emblem on his plane, the symbol, or keep it?
I think he'll keep it just as an homage to Messer.
He got a brief glimpse of it in at the start of this one as I'm slowly watching through it. The brief glimpse you got, it had its armor on, so I couldn't even tell if the color changed. But given all the other stuff they'd gone through, at the moment at least, I can't see them. I don't know if you see the plane later, but I'd be very surprised if they've changed it now, because you know, it would seem to be the least important thing to be doing right at this moment.
Right.
Oh, possibly, yeah. And no, again, just for me personally, I don't think that really reflects Hayate's personality, but granted, you could come back with, you know, when has that ever mattered in a Macross series? That's true. But again, Hayate's whole thing about, you know, not wearing helmets and being a free spirit, having a Grim Reaper on his of death on his plane just kind of seems out of character.
Yeah.
But anyways, while all this is going on, Hayate and Mirage are inspecting blocks of the island class ship, because they're still working out what's usable and what's not. We come across a couple of mercats in the house, so we know mercats can apparently survive out of water for extended periods of time, which is good. We do not see Heathcliff, which is a concern. I hope the little guy's all right. Or maybe he's gone to the VAR. We'll find out.
And if you notice, those two mercats are doing something. I think they're just excited to be reunited, but I'm realizing as I'm watching this again that what those two mercats are doing actually is like a foreshadowing of a big event that happens later in this episode, and I'll wait for Craig to be surprised on that.
No, I'm past that. But I didn't notice two cats humping. So
we get a few more details on Hayate's dad. Nothing specific, but he apparently does know his father's dead, which is something that hasn't been brought up before.
That's what I was going to ask, because that conversation I had a hard time translating. So that was basically, yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, my dead dad used to be in the military, was mm-hmm. what I heard.
This is when he's talking to Mirage and
Freya.
Mm-hmm. Freya in the dark area, right? Okay, I was wondering, they were having something to eat, like Freya was eating something. I wasn't sure what was going on there.
Right. So,
you know, anything that's them all standing around and talking without the sound on or translations is like completely like, I have no clue what's going on.
And we all kind of knew that it was full quartz, that was his necklace, but they actually confirm it. And he says, oh yeah, this is full quartz.
Yeah. That's true. And like, you know, he says he didn't really know what his dad did in the military. Again, he's like, he'd get these really weird letters like, oh, I'm in the desert, or I'm in a snowy area, like it's so cold, my teeth rattle. But he'd also send him like a snowman packed in an ice box as a souvenir or something. Like, he would just send him all these weird souvenirs with like one or two lines on like what the weather was like. So we don't know who he is yet. We know Ara knew him. So
when he's talking about his dad and then he says this, and then he does the thing with he looks up at the sky and he does the plane motion. Is it possible his dad could be Isamu?
Isamu? Holy shit.
It could be, I mean, but that would mean Isamu would have had to have died. Well, okay. Canon, not being canon, but between the Wings of Farewell and Delta.
Right.
Well, which, I mean, that,
but I mean, because we know, at, know as of true. As of the end of Delta that Isamu was still alive,
right?
And I mean, he no, was well, he on, still had on. His
Frontier, you mean?
A Frontier, sorry, okay. Yes.
I was just saying yeah. That's not true. We know at the start of that battle that Isamu was still alive.
Yeah. I mean,
for all we know, that was the battle that killed him.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. There's so many callbacks in this show. I mean, Mirage is related to Maximilia. So, I mean, who knows? I'm just saying, maybe that's, you
yeah,
know.
Maybe.
Yeah, Machina is related to the most famous mechanic in all of Macross, am I right?
Yeah. I mean, even though Hayata's last name is Immelman, but, I mean, is that, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought about his surname. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm just saying, maybe there's some correlation there.
I mean, that would be interesting, but I'd be very surprised if. I don't think they'd kill Isamu off screen that way either.
Maybe that could be for the movie. So the ship's getting all these power fluctuations, power reserves are down 28%, an explosion goes off, which makes the situation worse, and the resulting hull breach locks down the emergency barriers, which separates Hayate, Mirage, and Freya, and basically ends up with Hayate and Mirage being stranded together in a closed-off block of the ship. Shades of the original Macross, am I right?
Yeah, and then the same thing with Freya, where you think that she's going to be like Minmay and stuck, but then she's actually fine.
Right. Okay, see, now I've just gotten past that sort of point. Like, I'm a little bit ahead of that now, but I was going to ask you about that. Like, so Freya wasn't the one stuck. The other two are stuck?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's happening? Okay.
Yeah, because Freya can make it out, but they're, like, stuck in the airlock. So it's funny because I thought, oh, God, you know, they're going to lose Freya. She's going to go somewhere. But no, Freya actually ends up being fine. And this is just a device to get Mirage and Hayate together.
Yes. Very obvious device.
Yes.
So it turns out that
leads me to my next question, by the way, but we'll get there in a second.
Okay. In order for Machina and Reyna, they've got this plan concocted to get the Elysian hooked up and to bypass this docking system and to be able to transfer energy to the island class ship. And this explosion means they're losing, you know, power and air more rapidly. So they're like, well, look, we have to hurry up and do this. We can jury rig it, but there's one cable left that needs to be connected, and of course, it's in the closed off area that Hayate and Mirage are trapped in. How convenient!
Now, okay, I got that part. It's the next part that I'm going to need some help with.
Okay. Oh yeah. Now, while this is going on, you know, we're losing power. We're losing our fake sky projection. We're losing air. And the refugees are getting all depressed. I don't know if it's just me, but whenever there's a mob of people in Macross, if they're in anything that's not a concert scene, they just seem to be pretty annoying. And, like these refugees, granted they're refugees, but they're acting all down and stuff, like, before they start losing air. And it's just like, well, you've got air, what more do you need? Oh, we'll just take your air away. No, they're still complaining. I don't know, I just found them pretty annoying. But anyway, to cheer them up, while Kuro decides to throw out a new song. However, why are they doing this? Because it's all of while Kuro, right? Shouldn't Machina and Reyna be focusing on their energy transfer docking plan? I don't know how they have time to just jump out there and do a song.
They've got singing to do. No.
Yeah, I guess.
Nothing is more important than Macross than when there is singing to do.
This is true. This is true. You're 100% right there, Craig.
It cheers up. Well, plus, I mean, they really couldn't do anything until Mirage and Hayate got it online. So she's like, well, I'll leave it to you. And they'll do it. So they go off to go do what they got to do. And then the jackets come off.
Right. So this is where I'm confused. Why did Hayate and Mirage get mostly naked?
Because he's hot. He needs to be cool.
Really?
I don't know.
Why did he
take his jacket off?
Yeah, that's a good question, Craig. I don't even think it was properly explained. He was just like, hurry up. And she's like, all right. And she just
No. It's not just his jacket. They get down to, like, board shorts.
I actually think it's And I'll have to go back and rewatch it. I'm pretty sure that when I watched it on, like, the other night when it broadcast, I was taken aback in that it wasn't... I don't believe it was explained, but the thing is, they're trying to turn this handle of an emergency valve in zero-G, right? So they can't get the leverage to actually turn it. Plus, it hasn't been opened in 30 years, if at all, since launch of this island ship. So the whole idea is they've got to hold each other down to get as much force as possible on this.
Right. I got the leverage thing by that point. I just figured
that if they were all in their jackets, they'd be slipping and sliding off each other in the zero gravity, and they wanted to get in there tight. Even if they were holding each other really tight with their jackets around them, they wouldn't be. Yeah, they'd still be slipping and sliding around a bit.
So this is just a theory.
Yeah, it's just a theory.
Here's mine. Could it be that they were trying to... Were they throwing their clothes in order to get, like, equal and opposite reaction to get themselves pushed in the direction they needed to go? Like, because they were sort of floating in the middle of space. So did they, like, throw their jacket one way so that they'd be propelled the other way in order to get to where they need to go, and then they just have to keep ditching clothes until they got there?
That could be it. I'd have to rewatch the scene again, but that's equally as valid a reason. I don't think it was explained, but I could have missed it. It wouldn't be the first time. So this leads to the big scene of them getting all, you know, fan service-y. And the end of it is that it works, you know.
Hold on, Gwen, you glossed over the best part.
The fan service?
Well, not fan service, but the fact that when, you know, Freya still has her comms in, so she can still hear what's going on. She can't see what's going on, but she can still hear what's going on. And so, you know, Hayate is like, hey, pull, push, harder. So all she hears is this grunting and, oh, harder, go, harder, pull. And then Mirage is like, oh, yes, I'm there. So she hears this and she freaks out. Like, she blushes, you know, and all this stuff. Like, I thought it was the most hilarious thing. It's like Freya listening to, like, a phone sex line. And she hears, like, Hayate and Mirage, like, you know, doing the nasty, but they're not. But the fact that her mind went there, which, to me, that was hilarious.
Well,
no, I can see that.
Mike, I actually thought that was a little forced, because the way Mirage was replying was, like, really polite.
Yeah. Well,
fairly polite, given how she normally talks. So it was just, like, the way she was talking, like, replying to Hayate, I was just like, there's no way anyone would, you know...
Well, remember, Freya's 14, you know, so she doesn't know. All she knows is they're...
She's middle-aged.
Yeah, you're right, of course. Okay, yes. But anyway.
And before we continue, the mysterious Venus has decided to join us.
Oh.
Hey.
Hello.
Well.
A little worse for the wear, but I'm guessing everyone else is feeling the same way right now, too.
Yeah. Good morning, Sleepy Head.
Yeah. I'll call it a morning. I'm not sure if it's good yet.
How you doing there, big guy, Copen?
Dealing with it. Yeah, there's a lot to be happy about after this past week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Egan, we're just to bring you up to speed, we're just getting up to the point where we're just getting to the end of the episode. So we'll finish this and then we'll go back and let you give any impressions you had on it.
Sure. Sounds good to me.
All right. So at the end of this, Freya's phone sex hotline, the Elysian does basically go at island style with this ship to give it a spurt of energy. And the power comes back on. The emergency sealant systems to block the air, the air leak all come on. And just as this is happening as well, we find out that Lady Emma's negotiated a new contract with systems in the region, planets in the region, so that they now not only have energy for the ship, they're going to have money coming in, and they have a mandate to reclaim the system. So they've got permission and resources to go on the offensive, although I don't know if you call it resources yet. I get the feeling they're going to have to build this up a bit.
Yeah, well, they're not going to be launching the counterattack next week, I think, unless we get a time jump.
And that's, you know, and then we end with a big Scoopta shot, which is reminiscent of the original, where you see Mirage hanging off a Hayate, hanging off an emergency release valve now that gravity's kicked in. Of other points I'll just bring up briefly, which I thought were worth noting, we got a new ending then, which I believe was called Hametsu no Junjo, so a Purity of Destruction. And to me, like, I thought it was a great ending, not as immediately catching as the previous ending with Freya, but it sounded to me like it belonged in, like, an early 90s anime. It sounds like something from Yu Yu Hakusho. And there's just so much 90s musical influence in this show overall. I'm really loving it.
I didn't have the sound on, but the visuals are really cool.
The visuals, I thought, were actually a throwback to Frontier with that, the design sketch outline of characters and mecha like they did with Cheryl in the ending for Frontier. It was also nice to finally, and I think this is the second week it's actually been in there, see Miyatake's name in the credits, the designer of the original SDF-1, because he designed the Sigur Valens. So, okay. Renato, I know you're listening to this. Yes, you called it. That is what he did. So it was good to see his name added to the credits. And as I mentioned before, the stinger for the show, for the episode, showed the Sigur Valens leaving Ragnar. Hines saying he would succeed his father's will, continue his work and lead the system well. However, Roy kind of pulls him up short and asks him if he really intends to do that. And Hines is like, well, what do you mean? And Royd's like, well, I've seen your father's will. And that's where it leaves us hanging. So, anyways, Egan, do you want to tell us what you thought of this episode? Any standouts for you?
Seeing how they do address the fate, known or unknown, about Chuck's sister, that was good because we were left hanging from that from the previous episode. So, and seeing how that affected Chuck, although we're not getting the whole thing that we got with Messer, I'm glad that we're at least addressing that issue. Did you feel the same way as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of discussed that. We all, I don't know, I think we're all pretty much the feeling that, I don't know, well, I think our difference of opinion differ a little bit. Gwen thinks that they're keeping her alive, and when we come back and see her again, she'll be Vard out. I think that they're saving it just to be like a surprise, happy reunion when they get back to Ragna, and she's going to be fine. Craig, what did you think? She's dead?
I just think she's gone. I don't see the point in bringing her back at this point. I don't. As in narratively, I got nothing against her as a character, although. It took three of us to remember that her name, maybe. I think there's more narrative potential in her being dead than her being alive.
I did think it was interesting that the narrative kept out the possibility that she might be still alive. And I can't see them doing that without, well, having some kind of resolution to having.
True.
Yeah. So I'm thinking there might be some hope from people out there. It's not like Messer.
No.
Although everyone still had hope for that 1 week before we saw the funeral for Messer. You know, people were saying maybe he just lost an artery or something.
Just a flesh wound.
He just lost an artery. You know, those non-critical arteries.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, I glossed over it slightly, but so this big docking sequence or humping sequence with the
Asian. Okay. So I just watched that. What the hell? What the hell?
Yeah, who said that there was no fan service in Macross Delta?
Just imagine what we're going to get at Comic Kit. We're going to have mecha porn of an island-class ship going out with a Macross-class ship. Maybe they'll make t-shirts. I don't know. Keychains.
But like, what we thought we'd do was we'd undercut all of the tension by making it look like it's humping the... Because now it looks like it's pushing the island along.
Right.
Which is just... Ugh. Plus, if... What happened to the Macross class ship that came to Ragnar? Like, aren't all islands accompanied by...
I believe, like, fleets.
Essentially
are.
Battles.
We don't necessarily know that every island is, I guess. And then again, 30 years has passed. Maybe it got destroyed on first contact when all the Mercats attacked it.
I mean, isn't the Elysian the Macross ship, the class ship that was there with it? Or
if that was the case, wouldn't it just be able to dock normally?
Well, they do say the docking systems are all messed up.
Maybe.
But then again, it hasn't flown in 30 years, and isn't the Elysian like a cutting-edge
ship?
I don't get the feeling it's been there for 30-odd years.
Unless because the Elysian took over, like, Chaos took over the contract of looking after the world, so they, like, the nuns could pull out resources to do something else.
That could well be it. Or maybe the fleet just dropped one island there and kept going because they had all these habitable planets.
That's true. It was a whole cluster. Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that, but that makes sense.
Let's just hope the Elysian remembers to pull out.
Well, joke of the evening goes to...
I didn't even go there, you. Mike, because, you know, I mean... What was happening with the Elysian? What was thrusting? It was all Johnson's movement that was...
That's dang. Right.
I'm staying out of this one.
And Johnson just shot his load. I mean, come on. Yeah, no, we could go all night on these. But overall...
Power me.
I think we've just broke Egan.
I'm still mostly coherent. I'm good. I'm just not sure why I woke up for this.
But Egan, I think the episode was really mostly setting us up for what was to come. So I mean, they still haven't solved the problem of food shortages for the refugees or what really to do with the refugees. And Craig mentioned earlier, we don't have a clam on the island ship. So the ship itself is very, very vulnerable. And it doesn't have the Frontier's much better quality shields, apparently.
We should probably specify, by clam, I don't mean like food, because the Regnans are seafood people. Like the clam, like the drop down shield that goes over the top of the
Well, it's literally called shell.
Shell down.
Shell down. But so I mean, I think they want to find a way to offload that ship before they even think about counterattacking. Or what to do. I don't think they'll be lugging... Well, I don't think they'll be dragging anything into a final battle.
I think they'll be... It'll be a fleet thing. Like, they'll float around the system in, like, deep parts of space where they're harder to track, and Elysium will fold out and fold back in, like, on and off jobs.
Which would nevertheless leave them vulnerable if something were to happen.
Well, there are a couple of other ships with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. There's at least four.
Yeah,
that I noticed. This might be getting a little bit tech nerdy, but can Macross fleets? They can track each other in deep space, right? Like the sensor capabilities. Like, so they can't just like zip off between planets and just zip off into somewhere in the middle of the cluster where there's no worlds. And not be tracked, because can't they track ships through fold signatures and fold drives and stuff? Or is that too techno-babbly for everyone? No one knows the answer.
I think they can be sensed when the plot requires it, and don't have to, can't be sensed when the plot requires it.
Right. I think that's the sensible answer.
They've got plot stealth.
And I'm actually really curious as to where they're heading, because we don't really know where they've defaulted. It was an emergency fold. We know they're now out of
like deep space.
Yeah. My presumption was that, you know, they're going to be trying to head towards Lady M, but they've already reestablished contact with her. Again, means we have no reason to actually meet her. I was like, damn it. Because I was hoping the whole point in this is that they'd go directly to her to raise the cavalry. But she's already been in touch, being like, yeah, I've been negotiating stuff, and we got a new contract. You guys got resources incoming.
Do you think... The clusters, I wonder how long it takes to fold from the main galaxy into the cluster. I mean, it can't be that long, right? Like, it doesn't seem like there's any great delay in trade or information happening.
For now, the only person we've seen that to go from the cluster, no, the main galaxy to the cluster might have been the nuns representative, the new UN representative that came
the
by.
The major guy, yeah.
He's the only one that we've seen, right?
And he'd never seen Johnson in person. Now, is that a reference to just that he's been a desk jockey most of his career, or is it just that it's so far out in the outer edges that he doesn't come out here and therefore hasn't seen Johnson before?
Interesting.
Yeah.
But, I mean, nuns must be paying some sort of attention to it, because otherwise why all of the intrigue with nuns at all? Like, if this was just a little out-of-the-way cluster where Windermere is rebelling, like, there must be something in it for them
I think it's the protoculture ruins, obviously, because, you know, they're doing some kind of – they keep referring to, like, tests and you know, this is just like what they – you know, what the scientists said and whatever. So it's kind of like, you know, like there was these theories about the protoculture ruins that ended up appearing, you know, out of like fold space or whatever. And so they're gathering data on it for whatever reason, we don't know. But I think obviously that's the ulterior motive of nuns, is to get to these protoculture ruins, which is my guess is probably they were doing the same kind of thing on Windermere, and they screwed up really bad. And that's what caused the big, huge, you know, energy crater that's there on Windermere. And this could be why, you know, obviously why Windermere's so pissed off at nuns, because they did this to their planet. And I don't know. To me, that seems like that's their ulterior motive.
Yeah, we still have the question of what happened at Windermere. We have one side of the story from the Windermereans. We have the one side of the story from the new UN. And one of them may be right. They could both be wrong. Maybe they both were complicit in what happened there. So that's another mystery we have yet to resolve.
Yeah.
Most of the mysteries have yet to be resolved.
Indeed, yeah. There's one thing I was certain. Mm-hmm, go ahead. There was one thing I was certain of. As soon as they had to get their clothes off to perform the repair, you knew the scoop moment was coming. It was like everything was setting up. Like anyone who's seen the first Macrosis Do You Remember Love know what was coming right at that moment onward.
Egan, why did you think they were getting naked?
Well, getting the clothes off. I don't think they were going completely butt naked.
No, but why? But why did
we were trying to figure that out?
Like what they were doing.
Gwyn's only seen the first airing, so yeah, I don't think he's rewatched it. And so we were trying to figure out what was the reason that did Hayate even give a reason as to why he took his jacket off? Did you catch any of that?
No, plot expediency, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, I think they were using the momentum. Like they were taking it off and throwing it in the opposite direction to get themselves to where they needed to plug in the thing. Like they were using it as like course correction stuff.
Because
You see, like they're sort of floating in the middle, and then Hayate takes, and keep in mind, I watched it raw with the sound off, so I'm just going by the visuals. But Hayate takes his jacket off, throws it in the other direction and to take off in one way, and then he says something to Mirage, which is along the lines of, at least it looked like along the lines of like hurry up and follow or something. And then she takes her jacket off, and then you see the clothes floating behind them as they arrive at the pipe. So my read was that they were using that as propulsion.
Yeah, the more I hear that, the more it makes sense. But I'll rewatch it, but I don't believe it was explained explicitly. But anyways. So, look, guys, I think we're pretty much set up for next week, then. Any final thoughts on the episode from Craig and Mike?
Craig, I'll let you go for
it. As I say, I've only literally seen it. I haven't heard it. Okay. I didn't even have the sound turned on, so I haven't even heard the new song yet. But, I mean, it seemed like a decent enough, like, follow-on episode. Like, nothing leapt out at me, other than the junky animation early on that I thought was really quite poor. The close-up animation was fine, but as soon as we hit a mid-level on anything, it looked like it all went off model quite badly, especially on the bridge early on. But sorry, were you thinking?
Yeah, I noticed animation dipped a bit, but I was feeling forgiving because I remembered much earlier in Macross Frontier, for that matter, much earlier in the first Macross series, that we were seeing huge hills and valleys in terms of animation quality. So,
Frontier 13, that was the one on the island, right, where you had the weird fight with the wolf creature that was just the animation just took a left turn into something.
You can tell, yeah. There are places where, yeah, we got to give our main crew, the A team, a break.
Yeah.
And as we know, we know that certain folks were taking some time off and going to parts elsewhere during this series. So.
But yeah, like overall, I thought it was fine. It didn't. It's not the episode that's set my world on fire, but it hasn't made me hate the show or anything. It feels like just an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we enjoyed getting a laugh out of some of the goofier moments, but yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was fun.
Mike?
That's basically my thoughts on it. I noticed, like, the ship animations were great. I guess I'm more forgiving. I didn't quite notice the dip in character animation quality at all. I was just really focused on the story. And story-wise for me, it's just a nice... We need a breather, right? Especially after episode 13 and that whole thing. We just kind of need to decompress and, reestablish the tone of the series going forward. And so this is a good time for a little bit of character development with Hayate, finding out, what's going on with his father. Obviously, some fan service moments. Yes, lots of fan service moments. But
it was very plain fan service.
But especially with Mirage and Hayate, Gwen, I did feel the whole... Oh, look, they're separated. Oh, they're caught in a bulkhead. I mean, you've got some homage going on there. And then you've got also a little bit of forced alone time with our, two of three of our main leads.
Right.
And so, again, just like I had talked about in a previous episode where I felt like they were trying to force this relationship. Force the romance where it's not happening organically. Again, this felt like one of those times, but
yeah.
I don't have an issue with it. I'm just saying that, okay. And, again, and Hayata seems kind of like he doesn't care or oblivious to the fact that what's going on, but
I'm actually finding that annoying. Sorry to interrupt, man, but that the obliviousness, that's an anime trope that I hate.
Yeah.
And they're playing it up like the complete, they like me? What?
Yes.
It's really...
Well, I think...
Say what you will about Alto and Frontier, but he knew that at least Cheryl had a thing for him.
Yeah. Adrian's mentioned this before. It's just that, it's we see it because we're expecting it, but, not even the characters really see it, except for the girls that are starting to feel these feelings, but they're not sure...
if those feelings are
reciprocated, right? So who knows? But anyway, I did feel like it was forced a bit, but whatever. I mean, it's Macross. It's to be expected. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good just decompress episode. Time to move on. Let's set the stage for what's to come. And let's have a little humor and fan service just to kind of break up the seriousness of what's been happening so far. So those are my thoughts.
Egan, was there anything, because you have haven't had much of a chance to talk this episode, but was there any final points you wanted to raise?
Going back to the scene where they had to pull off most of their clothes, I just checked it out again, and it starts off with Mirage saying, can we repair this? And then, Hayate says, somehow we'll get this done. And then he pulls off his clothes without explaining, and then he said, hurry up, no, do this, no, get on with it to Mirage. So just like Craig said, no explanation, but like Craig said, the best explanation is, you know, using the closes to provide momentum to go where they need to go. So,
Yes, it's kind of cool that they don't explain it explicitly.
There's a lot of Macross Delta that's like that, where you kind of, the tropes. You know what's going on in science fiction. You know what's going on in Macross. You'll understand it.
And space travel at this point for the characters would be so, like, commonplace that they wouldn't need to explain. Like, one spacer would not need to tell another spacer, hey, here's what we're doing and why.
Right. They would just intimate it as much. Freya kind of explained why she was okay at the, in one part because of that. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, thanks for the confirmation, Egan.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. I would agree with everyone else is saying that it's a nice way, a breather that we kind of needed. Not just because of episode 13, but of that whole, the trilogy episodes that dealt with Messer and Kaname. Between that and episode 13, we kind of needed this to relax. You know, the staff needed it to relax after, going full head on during the first half of this series. So,
Sure if relax is the term I'd use, because they're still pumping out 25 minutes of animation, but I do get the point.
For example, like even the opening animation, recycled footage, for lack of a better word.
We definitely addressed that. Now, Egan, do you think that that's just for this episode and we're going to get a new, because that whole opening was basically just a recap of episode 13. So, and then Craig had mentioned that Frontier did the same thing. So do you think that we'll get a new OP next week?
Well, not exactly the same thing. The Frontier one was new animation. It was just, they had a one-off opening.
That's right.
Tricky question. Yeah, I was expecting a new opening to happen right now. No, I didn't in this episode. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm still expecting one.
Yeah, so was I, Egan. So was I.
And who knows? We'll maybe find out later on that they wanted to but couldn't. But then we'll see what happens. Yeah.
All right, so Egan, what is the name of this episode and what's the name of our next episode? Oh, wait, sorry, Gwen, did you want to give your final thoughts before we
chat? No, I'm good, Mike. I think you guys have summed it up pretty well, and we've rambled for a pretty decent length about this episode already. I'm just happy to see that the Mercats are alive, or some of them, even if not Heathcliff.
So Egan, please.
This episode was called Hyoryu Embracing, Drifting Embrace. Now we know why it's called that. But I didn't actually quite catch the next episode.
Next one, I believe, is Ketsubetsu Resolution. So it's like decisive resolution. There's a few different ways we could go with the translation.
But also, I did a quick double check. Episode 17 of Frontier was the one that had the weird one-off Ranker opening, and episode 18 of Frontier was the first one that showed Lion opening.
You think next episode we're going to get the same pattern, right?
Maybe. I'm just taking a guess. This is also earlier in the series, assuming that the series is the same length. So I don't know. I was just pointing it out where it happened in Frontier, I guess. Because that's the only precedent we have, because the original Macross in 7 never changed.
Even though I was expecting a new episode, I was glad that opening. I was still glad to see the song again, and of course, that nice way that that song was used in the, episode 13 to get a recap. I did like that part, though.
Just to very briefly touch on that next episode title again, I'd probably translate it as Parting Resolution. So we don't know whether it's a parting as in the fleet is moving on, or whether a ship leaves the fleet, or whether it's between characters that
Maybe it's because of the teaser. Maybe it's referencing the will of King Gramia.
Good one. It could be.
Oh, that's true.
So we could have a Windermere focus episode next week.
So
but
there was no like even still image next episode kind of tease or anything.
Did they show?
Was there? And this is why I should always have this running in the background. I don't. There probably was. I don't remember.
I didn't notice one, but I was chatting and only half paying attention. So hang on, I'll bring it up real quick.
Yeah, I'm checking right now. Yes, there is, and they do show Windermere. Okay. It looks like Windermere, you know, but it's just a real brief shot of like some kind of castle and like sun rays coming through like a cloudy sky. So.
Oh yeah, I got it. Yeah, you're right.
It does kind of look like Windermere, but who knows?
All right. Well, hopefully some backstory revealed next episode. Fingers crossed. But anyways.
Oh, and then real quick, just a shout out to everyone. We had quite a few people stop by the PA Works booth and say hello. So we do have, surprisingly, we have listeners. And so just a shout out to everyone that stopped by the PA Works booth over the weekend at Anime Expo. Thanks for supporting the cast, guys. Really appreciate it.
Nice. I'm looking forward to hearing all about that, Mike. Like as in,
and you will in the coming episode of the Macross Speaker Podcast.
Wow, really? I had no idea. All right, so before we sign off, then Craig, where can people find you and your rather large body of work?
Is that a fat joke?
No, you look at how many podcasts you've done. I know. Triple digits yet.
I'm just fucking with you. Well, Tuesday night as we record this, we just put a recorded episode 133 of Repacked. Over the last weekend, we recorded episode 16 of Reanimated. And last week, we recorded a special episode on Voltron Legendary Defender, the new Voltron series that aired on Netflix, with Matt from Reanimated and Paula from Tokusatsu Network, tokusatsunetwork.com. And I'll be putting that up as soon as I get a day to myself to do so, to cut it and edit it. I'm hoping Thursday or Friday, because my babysitter for tomorrow fell through. So, hopefully in a couple of days that'll be up. But yeah, Repacked, Reanimated, or the Scream Man on Twitter or anything like that. You'll find me. I'm not hard to find. I'm so fat.
Mike! Damn it, Mike, hurry up. Where can we find you?
Okay, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Mike in Redlands. Tweeted some stuff from Expo this week. Found a great Freya cosplayer that rolled through our booth, and that was really cool. Also, having worked at the PA Works booth, Craig just mentioned Netflix, Kuromukuro just debuted on Netflix, and it's gorgeous animation. It's mech a fun animation. Show. Yeah, so it's a mecha show. So anybody that's listening to us, you like Macross, you like mecha, Kuromukuro is gorgeous and is now available on Netflix as of July 4th. So give it a view. Again, you can find me on Twitter at Mike in Redlands. And thank you.
All right, Egan, we know you'll disappear until you mysteriously appear. Hopefully for the next cast, so I won't even
when the
ask.
Plot requires it. Yes.
Yeah. Oh dear, I'm gonna remember that one. And as always, this is Gwyn Campbell. You can find me at Gwyn Campbell, one word, on Twitter, or floating around various Facebook groups. And of course, you can contact the podcast by emailing speakerpod@gmail.com. But anyways. For what was an episode which presumably took it slower and was full of fan service and let the staff take it easy, we've managed to talk at considerable length, so I think it's time to fold out. So until next week, where we'll probably be more on time, although I'll admit, Craig, I'm throwing up the idea of doing these on Monday nights more often so you can be on board, but we really don't know how things are going to go at the moment. It may be something.
Well, I think we've proved that I don't need the subtitles to yammer on.
This is true. But either way, whether it be a Sunday night or a Monday night, we'll be back next week. Until then, we're folding out.
飛ばせギュンギュンギュン一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう光より早くキスをしよう待っててね忘れかけた体もただ聞こえ